This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Lawmakers are wrapping up the short session, possibly in time for the holiday. They met to establish a budget for the state. They've also taken up measures outside the financial realm, including bills that address a range of issues like coal ash, light rail, and sanctuary cities. And one of the longest-serving members of the legislature was indicted on charges of illegal campaign expenditures. Republican Senator Fletcher Hartzell of Concord turned himself in but says he will not resign. And the governor is meeting with Senate Democrats today to talk about possible changes to House Bill 2. WUNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff DeBeery brings us up to date. Jeff, welcome back.
Hello, Frank.
Let's start with HB 2. A lot of rumors circulating about possible changes. The governor meeting today with Senate Democrats and a few members of the Democratic members of the House. Am I right?
That is correct. The governor spoke to a group of senators last night at a kind of an end of the session dinner and invited Democratic senators as well as 10 House Democrats. We should note those House Democrats are the Dems who voted for HB 2 back in March, invited them over to the governor's mansion this morning at 11:30. I don't know how many of them ended up going, but a gaggle of Democrats left the General Assembly, took a sharp left turn on Jones Street and went up toward the governor's mansion. And they're meeting right now about possible tweaks, possible changes to HB 2.
Governor has met with he met with the Republican caucus yesterday, did he not?
He did. He didn't have much to say after that. There was a rare joint caucus meeting between Republicans in the House and Senate. Caucus is a closed-door meeting that the press, the media, the rest of us can't be privy on or listen into. So these conversations are about whether there's an appetite and ability to move forward with changes to House Bill 2. Those who have followed this for the past few months will remember that one of the provisions, not related to anatomical parts or bathroom issues, is dealing with whether or not somebody who has been discriminated against can sue in state court. Some of the talk centers around reinstituting that option, that recourse for folks. Everything I've seen, all the conversations I've had, the bathroom provision will not be changed. There might, could potentially be a proposal to shift some of the protections for LGBT people to the federal standard as opposed to the state standard. Should note that advocates and folks who have been critical of HB 2 for some time now say that this doesn't go far enough, and what they want, what they're seeking, is a full repeal. The big carrot here, one of the big carrots, right, is the NBA. In addition to politics and re-elections, you know, the commissioner of the NBA has said that he wants to see significant changes to this bill. And, you know, we don't know what it is will please him.
And so the only change really under consideration and that we've seen any even proposed and draft language about, as you said, surrounds the question of whether or not you can bring suit in state courts over discrimination that was added to the bathroom bill. The bathroom, not even under discussion. Interesting now, political watchers will have to speculate. Governor meets with the Republican caucus, comes out of that meeting. Then he meets with Democrats,
right,
including the few who voted in the House for it. That would suggest there is a political analysis that could you could apply here and said doesn't have it in the among the Republican caucus, but he could patch together a coalition with Democrats and maybe get at least that provision, that part of the change pushed through.
And interesting, isn't it, that something as divisive as House Bill 2 would need some of the most moderate, the right-leaning Democrats, the folks, the very few who kind of represent the middle of this political continuum at the General Assembly in order to get any kind of change pushed through. This in the same week that Democrats have been talking about how upset they are that they haven't been included in the process of the budget.
And so, as you say, the activists have already said that kind of compromise is not enough. Nothing short of a full repeal would do it. So then the question is, well, what's in it for Democrats? Why would any Democrat go on with that when their largest supporter, the Senate of their support, has already said repeal HB 2 or nothing. We're not going to take this compromise.
Right. And the question is which Democrats, how many of them really would agree to that? I spoke with one Democrat this morning, asked them if they had heard about this meeting with the governor, and they said they had not. They heard about it from the media. This is a more liberal, left-leaning Democrat, not somebody who's going to vote for any kind of tweak to HB 2. So We'll see.
We'll stay tuned. Meanwhile, there is other legislation apart from the budget. We've talked a lot about the budget, but let's talk about some other legislation that's getting through the legislature, a bill related to sanctuary cities. Where does that stand?
That right now is in a House committee, a House Rules Committee. It has advanced through the Senate and the House could take it up later today or tomorrow, or the latest indication is that the session will not wrap up this week or over the weekend, but they will be back next Tuesday and or Wednesday, and it could move through then. This, in essence, is a bill that would punish local communities that are issuing community IDs. This is an immigration bill, and what the General Assembly is seeking to do is that for communities that do have these community IDs that go to folks who are here from other countries, but also veterans and also folks who are living in homelessness, that these IDs would be banned, and cities that continue to issue them would risk funding for school projects and road projects moving forward.
All right. And that is, again, part of this package. We've seen agreement. We can expect that to pass, or is there still a chance that that might
fail? I think there is some discontent over that. If I were a betting man, and I'm not, I think that this will move forward largely as it is.
Because localities are saying, look, we have to – this is a great political statement to make, to say we're tough on immigration as a political statement, but as a local reality – our economies can't do without people who are working in these communities. We have to make it possible until you come up with something else for these folks to work here. So there is real tension at the local level about how you enforce this and whether or not they're going to be punished for their, what's the activist would say, are basically survival tactics for towns that can't afford to do without folks who live here.
Correct. And this, as we've seen with other kinds of bills over the last 3-4 years, is certainly something that could warrant litigation if it moves forward in its current form.
All right. What about light rail? Now, this is interesting. There's legislation here. I think it's in the budget that would affect light rail projects.
Yeah. A few years ago, the Triangle was greenlit on a federally greenlit on a program to have a $1.6 million light rail program, buses included, you know, making it easier for folks who don't have cars to get between Durham and Chapel Hill and then down the line Raleigh. Last year in the budget, lawmakers capped the amount of state funding at $500,000. Now, this is a partnership between local, state, and federal money where the federal government would kick in half of it, which $750 million or so. And, you know, the state would need to kick in several hundred million dollars. When they cap it at $500,000, that's not going to get the job done. So that's what they did last year. This year, they lifted that cap, but instead implemented a limit of only 10% of the overall cost of such a project could come from the state. So right now, this project just can't move forward. Mm. The doors aren't open, the funding doors.
A lot of jobs and economic development depending on light rail and, of course, federal money that would get spent in the state that could be thrown away based on this kind of cap that might make the project impossible.
Lawmakers from the Triangle are not happy with this. Congressmen G.K. Butterfield and David Price have stepped in and said that, you know, this is an obstructionist move by the General Assembly, and they are mostly Democrats, but there are also some Republicans that are upset that this has not moved forward. We should remember that the governor, you know, likes to talk frequently about the light rail project that he moved forward as mayor of Charlotte. So not going anywhere anytime soon.
All right. What about their proposed constitutional referenda as well? What are they?
Yeah, there are several here. One is called Tabor. It is a taxpayer bill of rights. It would limit state income tax at 5%. It would also mandate that year over year, 2% of whatever the budget is has to go into savings. That's one issue. Another issue is related to eminent domain. And there's a third proposed constitutional amendment, which some experts I've talked to say this really doesn't rise to the level of needing a constitutional amendment, but amending the state constitution to say that hunting and fishing and trapping are part of your constitution, your constitutional rights as a North Carolinian. So how this works is senators and House members, the senators have approved it. The House is considering approving it. They would then put these issues before the voters in November. One school of thought is this is in line with, you know, a very firm conservative shift for Republicans leading the state over the past few years. Others have said this might have something to do with concerns over Donald Trump being on the ballot in November, needing some, you know, some conservative ticket items to get
out the vote.
Get out the vote.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see. Longest ever serving member of the Senate, Fletcher Hartzell, a Republican from Concord, indicted this week. What happened?
He has been indicted for falsifying campaign finance reports. $340,000 or so went from the Hartzell campaign to Hartzell himself. He is facing – this is a state indictment. He's also facing a federal investigation. He got up on the floor hours after being indicted and – thanked and said the person that's been most adversely affected by this is his wife. An interesting scene, only in politics, if you will. Hours after being indicted, he thanks his wife and talks about all the great she's done. Then she got a standing ovation, and then some of the different lawmakers in the room talked about how great he has been for his constituents, for the General Assembly.
Didn't talk about the charges, though.
Did not talk about the charges.
All right, teacher pay. We talked about the budget before, but I know that teacher pay is a hot item and there will be some increases for teachers. But let's take a look overall education spending, because that's kind of an interesting question. In terms of per capita spending, when you adjust for inflation, the critique is, look, we have not advanced. We're still back before 2008 levels of spending. Per student in the state of North Carolina.
Sure. A couple of different ways to look at this. We'll try to streamline this as best we can. Numbers on the radio don't always work. 2007, in the state budget, there was $11.1 billion of education funding. Now there is 12.6 and change funding appropriation for education funding. Now, if you adjust for inflation, $11.1 billion in 2007 is equivalent to about $12.8 billion today. Other folks have said that this is, you know, one way to look at it and is an accurate comparison. It is also important to look at per pupil spending when considering this. But for folks who are saying pre-recession education spending levels have not been met, that point is accurate.
And other things, other indicators have gone up. Jeff Tabiri, WNC Capital Bureau Chief, thanks so much for talking
to you soon,
us.
Frank.
Just ahead on the state of things, the student debt crisis. We'll hear a new report by Reveal and the Center for Investigative Reporting about the ways some investors have profited, but students have not, from the loan debt. You're listening to the State of Things on North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned, please.